the Supreme Court reconsiders race in college admissions. How to have political disagreements without ruining relationships. And the freedom to think differently. Welcome to Fair News Weekly. To read all of the articles discussed in this podcast, please visit the podcast's episode description. And now a letter from Bayan Bartning. Dear friends of Fair, under current legal precedent, colleges and universities may consider applicants' race in making admissions decisions. However, the Supreme Court is currently reconsidering that doctrine in Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard College and Students for Fair Admissions versus University of North Carolina. On October 31st, 2022, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments. The skepticism toward racial preferences by a majority of the court was clear, and a potentially precedent-changing decision is expected by June 2023. Earlier this year, Fair's legal team and network counsel filed an amicus brief in support of Students for Fair Admissions. Our pro-human mission and philosophy means that we advocate for treating people as unique individuals who share a common humanity, and not as representatives of identity groups. Many policies and programs intended to ensure equal opportunity for all individuals, including those from historically underrepresented groups, align with our values of fairness, understanding, and humanity. However, policies or programs that discriminate against or advantage individuals based on skin color or ethnicity in order to achieve group-based outcomes are inconsistent with Fair's principles. As Fair's chief legal officer, Letitia Kim, states in the brief, it is a given that the competition for limited spaces at elite institutions is nothing if not fierce. In a just world, any student selected for admission should be confident that criteria were fair and evenly applied. Where immutable traits are added to the admissions mix, this perception of fairness may be cast into doubt. Group preferences stigmatize individuals of African and Latino descent. Many individuals described the demoralizing self-doubt they experienced from wondering whether they received their positions only as a means to fill a hidden quota. Two generations ago, my father, an immigrant from Mexico, benefited from programs that gave him access to job opportunities and scholarships that were not available to my mother, whose Ashkenazi ancestry had imbued her with lighter skin. My wife, who immigrated to North America as a refugee from Ukraine when it was part of the former USSR, was similarly excluded from work and educational opportunities due to her ancestry. At what point can we start to hold every person to the same standards and seek to grant them access to the same opportunities, regardless of skin color, ancestry, gender, sexual orientation, or other immutable characteristics? Discriminating against a person based on the color of that person's skin upends this nation's foundational tenets of equality, the importance of individual rights, and the need to temper institutional power while sacrificing our humanity in the process. Fundamental principles formed over centuries through the democratic process and forged through the crucible of tyranny and oppression should not be abandoned. It is wrong to treat applicants as representatives of identity groups rather than as unique individuals with intrinsic value. By using reductive group preferences that are a crude proxy for an individual's life experience, competence, or character, we elevate institutional interests over individual rights. In turn, this promotes division, resentment, and dehumanization. America is increasingly a country of people with mixed ancestry. Last year, an overwhelming 94% of U.S. adults approved of marriages between people racialized as Black and people racialized as white, up from 87% in 2013. The change in attitude towards intermarriage over the past two generations is striking. Just 4% approved when Gallup first asked the question in 1958. And it's not just opinions that have changed. In 1967, the year that the Supreme Court struck down anti-miscegenation laws in southern states, with the landmark Loving v. Virginia decision, only 3% of marriages in the U.S. were between people of a different race or ethnicity. By 2015, those rates had increased more than fivefold. For U.S.-born Americans with Asian or Latin American ancestry, today the rate of marriage to a person of a different race or ethnicity is even higher. 46% and 39%, respectively. The wound that remains on our national psyche from the legacy of historical injustices and racism will never fully heal if our institutions continue to impose increasingly meaningless racial classifications upon consecutive generations of youth. Our country has made immense progress towards overcoming the legacy of historical injustices and the false construct of race since the start of the civil rights movement almost 70 years ago. In our amicus brief, Fair urged the court to rule in favor of the petitioner and reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals for the First Circuit. We are hopeful that they will make the right decision. Let's keep moving forward, together, toward a pro-human future. Yours, Bayan Bartning. This week on our Substack, Julian Adorni wrote about the increasingly common phenomenon of losing friends or loved ones over political disagreements and how to navigate those difficult conversations. He writes, "The soldier has one goal, to win the battle, protect their side, and defeat the enemy. The soldier isn't interested in shades of gray or in finding common ground. He's interested in winning. Given our tribal roots, the soldier mindset is highly adaptive. When you're at war with a rival tribe, letting down your sword to mull over how your opponents might actually have a good point is a good way to get killed. The scout, however, has a different goal, to understand. She wants to find the truth, because getting an accurate picture of the situation, whether it's the terrain, the location, and numbers of the enemy, or the weather, is essential to helping her side succeed. The scout approaches the problems of the world dispassionately, like a researcher, unblinkered by ideological biases or motivated reasoning. You may be thinking that times are tough, the stakes are high, and the soldier is what we need right now. But in the words of Abraham Lincoln during perhaps the greatest period of strife in our nation's history, we are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies, though passion may have strained. It must not break our bonds of affection. The mystic chords of memory will swell when again touched, and surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature." If Lincoln can think that during the Civil War, we can certainly think it now. For Free Black Thought, FAIR advisor Greg Thomas wrote about the rising call for deracialization, eliminating race and racialization from our sense of self and our public life. Thomas writes, "From my perspective, race is a categorization and hierarchical sorting of human beings into subspecies based on skin color and phenotype differences. The express purpose of such selecting and sorting and, as we shall soon see, of attribution, essentializing, and acting in a racist manner was to enable the oppression and exploitation of darker-skinned people by situating them within a caste-like structure whereby those classified as white had more ready access to the social, economic, and political benefits and opportunities of a modern system of free enterprise. Culture, in contrast, is human meaning and values expressed in forms of creative production, art and technology, rituals, patterns of behavior, and ways of seeing and being in the world, lifestyles. One can also view culture as shared agreements, practices, and symbolic communication among groups of people. Another approach to culture is more developmental, as in the use of education to cultivate and improve the human capacity to elevate and refine, thereby producing more cultured individuals." On her Substack, Broadview, FAIR advisor Lisa Celine Davis hosted guest authors Reed Newton, FAIR legal analyst, and Michelle Polino, FAIR in the Arts Fellow. Both are lesbians of different generations who share similar concerns about the direction of the LGBT movement and worry about its potential to harm gender nonconforming young women and lesbians. They say, "We often search for each other in crowds, the wild women who weathered the storm to become our authentic selves. We almost always recognize each other and exchange a knowing glance and a nod because we know what it took to get here. There is an innate kinship and understanding of the magic that lies within us, an unspoken network of women loving women out loud, no longer hidden and unseen. A network of women allowing each other to present themselves to the world however they see fit and not have their womanhood questioned. A community of those who have released ourselves from the burden of secrecy and shame to allow for our truest selves to come out. And yet, now we're being told we're doing it all wrong. That being lesbian is inherently exclusionary and bigoted. That being a more masculine woman means you must really be a man. That all of our hard work has been for nothing. This is a hill the wild women, those who run with the wolves and are unafraid, are willing to die on. Our message to the tomboys and the butch lesbians is this: your humanity deserves gentle exploration on your own terms. Your identity is not a disease that needs treatment or an infection that needs to be cut out. You are perfect just the way you are. And to our trans brothers and sisters, we stand with you, and we defend your rights to live as you see fit. All we ask is that you allow us to have a seat at the table without demanding we renounce the very identity that has shaped both who we are and who we love. To speak honestly with us about the risks and benefits associated with socially or medically transitioning. Only then will we be able to do right by young women navigating a world that is already poised to challenge them at every turn. On his Substack, Bill Walton hosted our very own Bayan Bartning. Bayan launched FAIR to address head-on the tribalism, identity culture, and politics of division that are pitting Americans one against the other. The two discuss so-called anti-racist ideologies and what it means to be pro-human. Our approach is to reclaim the words, reclaim the language, explains Bayan. We're just insisting on what those words really mean to the vast majority of people. For example, the word equity means the quality of being fair and impartial. And we're not going to give up on the word diversity. Diversity is a good thing. And just because somebody's pushing conformity and calling it diversity doesn't mean that we give up on the word diversity. I think what most people need is to feel that they're part of a community, explains Bayan, pushing back against these toxic ideologies. They need to feel that there are people backing them up, supporting them, who can help them with messaging and how to talk about how we are unique individuals with a shared common humanity. We call it being pro-human. For The Hill Opinion, Robert Maranto, Michael Mills, and Catherine Salmon explore what diversity, equity, and inclusion really means and the impact it has had on our institutions. They say, in the academy, DEI and other identitarian orthodoxies are often mandated to be taught in student orientations and required courses, and enforced by campus DEI bureaucrats who now outnumber history faculty. By categorizing virtually any criticism as prejudiced, DEI bureaucracies can chill free speech and have empowered some college presidents to slander their critics as bigots and then terminate them. Program renewals for academic departments and thus continued employment for professors and graduate students are increasingly tied to embracing DEI rhetoric and goals. DEI, in many respects, is a revolutionary ideology, but it is winning. This is in part due to fear of ostracism, censorship, or termination, but also because you can't beat something with nothing. Enter University of Chicago, Professor Dorian Abbott's DEI alternative, Merit, Fairness, and Equality, MFE, which is consistent with traditional enlightenment and scientific values. Under MFE, academic decisions are based primarily on academic merit, well-validated standardized test scores, grades, and, for faculty, publication and teaching records. Individuals are primarily evaluated on their achievements, not by their group identities. This respects individual dignity and promotes the primary mission of research in higher education, the production of knowledge. For Tablet, Blake Smith wrote about how Judith Shuklar's minority liberalism offers both an escape hatch from the Habesian tyranny of democratic majorities and a pathway to becoming the freest and most authentic versions of ourselves. Smith writes, thinking of ourselves and so undoing and renewing ourselves requires a social context of other thinkers who are free to say what they think out loud, protected from both state censorship and through the action of a strong but neutral state, from the efforts of present and future majorities to annihilate thought. Perhaps only those who have tasted the dizzying sweetness of free thinking can know that there is something better than will to power and resentment that constitutes the emotional life of democratic politics. The primary task of a Shuklarian liberal, then, would consist of awakening others to that savor, to showing them that they, too, like each of us, are permanent minorities. Join us on Wednesday, November 30th, from 7 to 8 Eastern, to hear updates on FAIR in the Arts' ongoing initiatives, participate in group discussions with the team and fellows, and meet others who share pro-human values and who want to make a difference in their own communities. Arts practitioners, advocates, and media professionals. Anyone who wants to create a culture where artists and others are free to express themselves are welcome. Register now with the link in the description. Applications are now open for our full-time summer internship program for highly motivated and open-minded undergraduate students. Ideal candidates value curiosity, compassion, and courage, have excellent communication and leadership skills, and show a passion for FAIR's pro-human values and vision. This internship provides students with real-world experience in a nonpartisan and mission-driven organization, while also empowering students to become ambassadors for FAIR's mission. The internship is fully remote, except for an in-person orientation during the first week of the internship. Over the course of the internship, interns attend weekly all-hands meetings and work with a specific team to assist with new and ongoing projects. As a cohort, interns attend lunch and learns and seminars with thought leaders who promote our pro-human mission. Interns are expected to return to campus with a plan for bringing FAIR's mission and approach to their respective colleges and universities. If this sounds like you or someone you know, apply today. We want the FAIR Substack to be the go-to publication for diverse perspectives on culture and civil rights. Whether you're a seasoned author or an amateur writer with a story that can contribute to our mission of promoting fairness and understanding and humanity, we would love to receive your stories, opinions, investigations, reviews, interviews, and more. Send your piece to submissions at fairforall.org. We hope to hear from you. Finally, if you liked this podcast, subscribe, share with a friend, and leave us a rating and review. Make sure to check out our newsletter and weekly roundup to read more into any of this week's stories, or visit the episode description. Donations are always welcome at fairforall.org/donate.